Thank you, members, back once again, and welcome to this portfolio committee, the National Film and Video Foundation, which is going to present their annual report as well. And I believe that members have it, and it was sent to the Pigeonholes last week already. My name is Tandile Sondoza. I am the chairperson of this committee, and I will introduce the members of the committee. We welcome you in Parliament. I would like the members to introduce themselves so that you can know them, who you are interacting with. After the members have introduced themselves, you will tell us who you are and where are you from and your portfolio. As I've already said, my name is Tandile Sondoza. I'll start on my left.
Good morning, I'm Annelie Lockley, DA.
Member of the ANC, a member of this committee as well.
Is Avi Mavunda, member of this committee?
Emina Hosumanitwa, member of the National African Congress.
I'm Lina Moss, also member of the portfolio committee.
Peter Warren, member of this portfolio committee.
I'm Foli Mushwana, deployed by the ANC, coming from the Congo, member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. We'll give over to the CEO to introduce the team.
Good morning, members. My name is Edim Balo. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the National Film and Video Foundation. On my left is Ms. Karen Son. She is the Chief Financial Officer at the NFVF. And on the extreme left is Mrs. Ayateri Makwanya, formerly Zebu. She's our Head of Policy and Research. She's recently gotten married.
Thank you, CEO. Before you start, what you will do, you will present to the honorable members here. And the honorable members will ask you questions in any form. There is nothing to be offended about. It's answers that we must get. Unfortunately, we are representing the public. We represent them even financially because public funds are being used and it must be accounted for. Before you entered, we just sent the previous presenters away because they thought they are coming to this portfolio committee of people who don't know their story. They did not finish. So I was just making you aware that if we don't get the answers, we might as well send you back home. So we would like those as honest as possible because we're also doing our job here. We've got rules that we follow in Parliament. We are guided also by the financial bills of Parliament. We have a parliamentary monitor group behind us that is checking that we are doing our work. So unfortunately, not to scare you, CEO, but we're just making you aware that these people that you see in front of you, the other people, when they come to present, they think that we are uneducated, we don't know what we're doing, we're just checking quick and then we say thank you. Unfortunately, not all this portfolio committee. We have seasoned members here who will just know the problem and say, Chair, in our cap CEO here, then we'll just send you home for lunch. So the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are very, very happy to be here, and we welcome the opportunity to interact with the Portfolio Committee. As you've said, we clearly understand the role of the committee and its oversight role over the institutions that are accountable to the public. We have been a bit distressed ourselves in that it is at least 4 years since we have interacted with the portfolio committee. And as much as we know that we, you know, the institution has been performing extremely well, and our outputs are generally out there in the public, we feel it's important that at least we are able to interact with Parliament so that we get the feelings of South Africans and communicate it through this institution. We understand that we're supposed to be talking to the annual report of 2009-2010. And if you look at the report itself, the design, it's a reflective design, because we took the opportunity of designing this report of also reflecting on the last 10 years of the NFDF, because in the time under review, we were celebrating 10 years of the institution. We feel that the institution has performed, and we're grateful and thankful to the support that we have received from previous ministers, the current minister, and the Department of Arts and Culture. So I'll start by talking to what guides us. When we started to the NFDF 2001, we started developing strategies that would guide the institution towards the development of our industry. In doing so, we developed what we called the Value Charter, because we felt that we needed some kind of blueprint that would guide us into the future as we were a new institution altogether. And we say that the Value Charter articulates desirable ends about structural objects of the firm sector that are currently unevenly distributed in our society. The Value Charter reminds us that film and video are not just about pacifying the nation with forms of escapism. We believe that film can be used as a tool to educate, to inform, but also to help document our own history as a country. So normally, or generally, film and video or television are normally used as escapes from the real life. And we say that is not the case in our situation in South Africa. In developing the Value Charter, we developed what we call the moral imperative. In fact, the moral imperative, we came up with it at the same time as when the ruling party around 2003-2004 was talking about the fact that we all need to have a social contract with our people. At the NFDF, we decided to develop what we call the moral imperative, and it reads as that. It is a national imperative to create facilities for ordinary South Africans to bear influence in the expression of their own images, thereby deepen democracy and create prosperity. The National Film and Video Foundation strives for their realization of this noble ideal. This is very important for us because for every decision that we make on a daily basis, we then ask ourselves, is what we are going to be doing, is the decision we are about to take, in line with our moral imperative? And we've attempted up to this point to keep to that. And we think it's something that will continue to guide this institution in actually it becoming a service institution around the firm opportunity that exists in our country. And therefore we say the moral imperative together with the value charter forms the basis for engagement at a political level so that we get legitimacy with this institution. It helps us develop policies and programs that will actually impact on society, but also it puts the NABF at the point where it becomes a mediator between the interests of the state, the industry itself, but also ordinary South Africans. This model here shows exactly where the NABF sits in terms of its role within society. This is very important for us because sometimes the industry actually believed that the NABF was established to serve them as the industry. And therefore it was important for us to say we need to look at all the stakeholders and the state as a representative of South Africans generally, but also civil society, NGOs, unions and everyone else has an interest in what the NABF does on a daily basis. And for us this reminds us of our responsibility and our accountability to society. Having developed the blueprint, we developed the content strategy and we did that in collaboration with the Department of Arts and Culture, Department of Communication, the DPI, and South African Revenue Service. The content strategy calls for a comprehensive strategic thrust that would create sustainable development and growth of the whole audiovisual content industry. In 2003, Cabinet approved the content strategy. Out of it came what we today would know as the DTI rebate or the DTI incentive scheme that supports the film industry. Around that time, the NABF then developed a business case. The DOC was then supposed to, with the institution, under the DOC NEMISA, National Electronic Media Institute of South Africa, to develop the digital content side of the strategy. So if you look at the slides on the left in orange, that is where the DTI and the rebate sits, because that's where, for instance, support for foreign films that come to shoot in South Africa get the support. The NABF sits within the middle where we're supposed to develop indigenous content, but also co-produce with friendly countries from around the world in developing our content, but also content that links us with the rest of the world. And then on the right, it is the digital content which we're supposed to get guidance from the Department of Communication. So unfortunately, once the DTI was able to move with the rebate between the DAC, NABF, and NEMISA DOC, there was very little movement. And if you wish, we could discuss the detail around that later. So the business case, we said it was informed by firstly, the cultural industry's growth strategy, the macroeconomic reform strategy, the accelerated growth, shared growth initiative for South Africa, recently the industrial policy action, and today we are adapting our strategies to fit within the new growth path as articulated by government recently. Coming back to the NABF, we look at governance, we're proud to say that the MFDF has received unqualified audit reports each year since its establishment in 1999, but of course the administration started in 2001. We have been able to create good financial and performance management systems and controls. We have effective internal control functions where we have the annual risk assessment and we have a 3-year internal audit plan. Of course, structure becomes critical, the executive structure and control. We are controlled by a council of 13 members. The Act demands that we have an executive committee of council. The PFMA requires that we have an audit committee, and we have created the human resources committee. As we sit, members, we do not have a council. The process of appointing the council started as early as November last year, and a week ago, the new council or potential council members were publicly interviewed. But that process is outside of our control. It is a process that is managed and controlled within the Department of Arts and Culture. Our human resources strategy is in line with our strategic direction. We have a performance management system that takes care of talent management and mentorship program successfully developed and implemented. In terms of remuneration, our salary increases are based on the DPSA and a performance management review system that we are told this year and into the future becomes an audited requirement, an audit requirement. So our performance management will be audited and reported on in our annual report. In terms of human resources, our employees at the NFEF have a comprehensive provident fund and medical aid scheme. We believe and we enforce employment equity and workplace diversity. Staff complement of 26, 92% black. Of the total staff complement, 74% are female. Of our senior management, 67% are women, 7% are men. Are women at senior management level, and 76% middle management are women. We take very seriously the issue of women emancipation and empowerment because our industry is notorious for male dominance. Most films that are shot, usually you'd find women play very small roles, assistant this, assistant that. And we decided right from the beginning, because we believe it starts at a leadership level, that the NFEF will be biased towards women, because we need to be an example to the industry that these things are possible, they are achievable and possible. In terms of training and development for the sector, in 2001, when we launched the Lionel Gakana Scholarship Fund, which provides bursaries to South Africans who want to take film as a career. In the last 10 years, we've issued 453 bursaries. 81% of those have gone to previously disadvantaged individuals. 31% has gone to females, were black, and 6% of females were white. Males, black, 50%, and 13% of those are white males. So that is the total number of passports that have been issued. Of course, later when we talk of the National Film School, we'll be able to tell you of the need for the establishment of the National Film School, because study for film is becoming inaccessible because of the cost. At the moment, the schools that run, the schools that are operated in the film industry as film schools are privately owned, except for the film school within the Tony University of Technology. And of course, we do not prescribe where young people should go. The majority of those that apply to us for bursaries choose AFDA in Johannesburg and AFDA in Cape Town. And the fees currently, if you want to study film, you would have to pay 50 to 60,000 rand per annum. So it's becoming expensive, it's becoming inaccessible. That's why we call for the establishment of the National Film School. We have a Trevor Jones Scholarship Fund, which was established in a joint partnership with Trevor Jones himself, the National Film School from the UK, and the NFEF. Just for your information, Trevor Jones is a South African who left the country 30 years ago on a scholarship to study in the UK. Trevor Jones today is one of the five top music composers for film in the world. When you watch big Hollywood films, you'll always see Trevor Jones. And Trevor Jones is not white. In terms of training and skills development for the sector, we felt at a certain point that the NFEF needed to intervene, particularly in the areas where we feel the industry is not having an impact.
The aircon paper, but not too high, but he thought. I can still remember a boy.
I was going to ask for
in terms of training and development, about 4 or 5 years ago, we felt that there were areas that were necessary for us to intervene. And we will only intervene in times when there's a great feeling that the industry is not impacting in certain areas. And one of the big areas that we are lacking, as much as everyone will tell you, South Africa has got many stories to tell. The difference is that we do not have enough skills to translate those stories onto the screen, because screenwriting is a specialized skill, and therefore it was necessary that we established or create a program that would deal precisely with that. Today we have a program that is running successfully called Spark for Narratives. That spark, it was tapping the talent. We wanted to create that spark in tapping the talent. So we have Spark for Narratives and Spark for Documentaries. These are script development programs, particularly for script writing. So whilst we have great novelists, whilst we have stories that are sitting in people, you know, we have to have people who go out there and tap these stories and put them on paper and translated into forms. Now, if before the SABC crisis you saw a lot more documentaries being produced, I'm sure most members would have seen that at the end of the documentary you would find an NFVF logo. It is because those documentaries that you see on SABC, on ETV, are co-funded by the NFVF. Most of them, the creators have come through our development program. If you think that there's been an improvement in the quality of drama, particularly on the SABC, it is because most of the writers have come through our CDEVA skills development program. Of course, once people have gone through the initial stages, then we bring them back for the master's program. The master's program that we run is rated at the master's level at university. In fact, UCT, VEDS, AFDA, these institutions have their trainers, their professors who teach script at these institutions sitting on our program also getting retrained themselves. Because we found, with all due respect, that some of the people who teach script writing at universities actually have never made a film themselves. So it is always from a theoretical perspective. So what we do is we help and we give people the practical experience in script writing. In fact, we prescribe about 14 books on our program for those who want to be scriptwriters to go through. We've been able to negotiate. We import the books from outside of the country, and they are able to get the books at 50% the cost that they would have paid at the bookstore in South Africa today. So we've made these books easily accessible to the writers. Once we had developed our script and the scripts were coming through, we identified another problem, that in fact in South Africa we're lacking greatly in people who produce. I'm sure you meet people who wake up, some of them have woken up every day because they have no job or they don't know what to do, they become producers. And it's a big problem in our country because firstly, most of our producers have worked through television. So what they know is writing a proposal, give it to the SABC, get commission, and that people take that as producing. Producing is about taking the script, breaking it down, packaging it so that you can then go out and raise finance for your film. And you will see later as we go on, producing films is not a cheap affair. And therefore, the specialized skill, usually with a background in law and maybe background in finance, those two skills bases make better producers. Because, you know, with all the two skills, you still need to be a creative person because you need to have the ability to read a script and make a very an informed. So once we had realized that problem, we developed what we call the a master's producers program, where the majority of the people that are actually producing are retrained and given the skills to be able to interact at an international level. I'm saying international level because, as you'll see later, the bulk of our funding still comes from outside of the country. The bulk of funding for our firms still comes from partners from around the world. Nothing wrong with that, because yes, as a country, we still need to give other priority areas funding. So we're not complaining. But once we had developed the master's program for producers, we had another problem. We're not getting enough black people to come through a program. And we realized that, in fact, the majority of black producers were still operating at a television level, because yes, in South Africa, television has been used for years as a training ground for filmmakers. So today we have 35 participants on our Emerging Producers program, and the majority of them are black. Now just talk a little bit about these programs, because as members, but also as representatives of communities, you find that there's a lot of resistance to actually the NFDF running these programs. People were saying the NFDF is competing with other training providers. Unfortunately, no one has been able to show us who is it that is doing what we're doing. We say and we argue that the state will always intervene in cases where the market fails. So it works very well for us in this way. If no one is running these programs, we have a responsibility. But also because these programs are transformational. At some point, one editor of a magazine, an industry magazine, wrote about the fact that she was standing outside their house and she was watching these people who were assisting in the moving of the house, and you know, the number of people who were carrying the boxes. And she argued that, in fact, that's what we should be encouraging. We should be encouraging people to be laborers, to be picking up boxes. She said, no, that's not the responsibility of the NFDF. If you look at the NFDF Act and the five objectives, three of, up to four of them talk about redress, they talk about creating new opportunities, it talks about changing the landscape. And we believe we can only change the landscape by giving people an opportunity for training. And we know today it is working, and it is working successfully. So, just for your interest, in terms of numbers, between 2007 and 2010, the number of scriptwriters trained 104, black females 27%, white females 10%, black males 52%, white males 11%. Number of script editors trained 44%. Black females make 48%, white females 11%, black males 34%, white males 7%. Just to give you an idea here, if you asked me 4 years ago and say, Eddie, give me a black script editor, there was only one person that I could give you. And that person works for the NFDF today. Clarence Hamilton, you remember, he wrote and directed Tomorrow Fish 1 and 2. We had no black script editors. So, as you can see, today we can say to you, at least for the of the people that we have trained, of the 44, 48% black female and 34% black male. So, today, the head writer in the Isidingo, as an example, Loniso, can you remind me the name? He's the head writer at Isidingo. He came out to our Sidiba program. So, we can practically show you the people that have been developed. Producers program, we started the producers program in 2009, and 18 producers were trained. Black females 38%, black males 13%, and so forth. Part of our training involves actual practical making of films. few years ago, 2007, 2008, we had two competitions that we put out. One was a competition for people to submit material in indigenous languages. So the scriptwriter had to be black, the writer had to be black, and the story, the script had to be in an indigenous language. So we had another competition called Women Helmers, where we were looking for black, for women across the board, but the writer had to be a woman, the director had to be a woman. And out of the of those, there are two short films that we can be very proud of. A short film called Father Christmas Doesn't Come Here was produced, was directed by Begisi Dia, who was a first-time director, first-time writer. And the film won the best narrative script at Tribeca Film Festival in New York. That film, short film, 15 minutes, has been invited to not more than 240 film festivals around the world. So Beggy has been quite busy. Because going to a festival with a film, you meet up with producers, financiers, distributors who then want to invest in your skill. A Superhero is another short film directed by a woman, white woman. Of course, there are some other short films that we can talk to that came through this program. We had another competition, 25 words or less pitch. So you had to pitch in less than 25 words. And this was in partnership with the UK Film Council in anticipation of a treaty that was to be signed, which was ultimately signed in 2008 with the UK. Jimmy and Pink is a film that is going to production very soon, in the next few months. Kumba is a big animated feature film that is currently being produced here in Cape Town. It's going to be 3D. In fact, whilst working on this film and we took them to New York, they were able to raise the money there. They were able to develop another film, another animated feature film called Zambezia. Now, I'm talking about this because Kumba has been produced for the last 2 years, and there are 60 animators sitting in some farm in here in the Western Cape, busy on this film. 60. Now, 60 people employed permanently for 2 years on one production. In fact, the same team, as soon as they finish this film, the film will be finished in May this year, they move immediately into the production of Zambezia. I can tell you now, those two films, if Tosi did anything for South Africa, Kumba and Zambezia is going to be even much, much bigger. I hope it will be as big as District 9 in terms of box office returns, but I think it's going to put the standard of South African animation at a much, much higher level. So we will keep you posted on the developments around this week. We are waiting this, particularly with Kumba, because Kumba was our own initiative. It's something that we started from scratch, so we have a claim to it, rather than something that came applying for funding to the NFVF. Well, as for the Act, we're supposed to guide the state or government on the establishment of the National Film School. We received 2 million rand from the Department of Arts and Culture. That was 2005-2006, and we've been working on the study. The study was recently published. It's, I take it was distributed to members. it's an extensive study that argues for the establishment of the National Film School, as I said. The way forward is that now we need to develop feasibility study and the business plan, and we hope we'll be able to do this jointly with the Department of Arts and Culture. I have to say, we in the study we created a research forum which was made up of the Department of Education, the Department of Trade and Industry, the NFVF, the Council for Higher Education, and the IDC. Because again, we feel that something of this nature needs to have a collaboration of everyone who actually impacts on the film industry. I have to say, we were surprised at the endeavor we hosted in 2009, where the industry actually came out saying that we do not need the National Film School. We were shocked. But we concluded that it was a few lobby groups that had lobbied because they think that the National Film School threatens their businesses. We feel strongly that the National Film School has to be put in place if we're going to address the issue of transformation and training. Our production and development department is informed by a philosophy that says we need to understand the market in South Africa first. We have to encourage work that resonates with local audiences and also addresses national imperatives. We need to increase the number of scripts that are developed. Normally the ratio is 10-1. For every 10 scripts that are developed, at least one of them has to be a successful script that goes onto the screen and hopefully gives us the returns in box office. We have to increase the volumes of production. I'm sure members would have issue with the fact that our airwaves are dominated by Hollywood products. 2 years ago, I had a professor friend who I asked to deliver a lecture at TUT, Tshwane University of Technology, to speak on protecting cultural identity in the new age of television. And his conclusion was, the only way you would protect yourself or block dominance by foreign products is by creating your own product. Whilst we'll be talking of quotas and so forth, for as long as we're not producing our own films, for as long as we're not developing our own content, and I know the chairperson is very passionate about learning from the experiences of Bollywood and Hollywood, the truth of the matter is that we have to educate ourselves, we have to put a lot more effort in ensuring that we actually increase the volumes of films. In fact, up to 1994, South Africa was producing about 134 films per annum. We've gone down to about 10 films, and at least this year we have about 20 films that all together. Now, this is very important, members, because if we're also going to create sustainable jobs, if we're going to create sustainable jobs, we need to be producing the volumes, or otherwise our people continue to become freelancers. And freelance means no job security, no medical aid, no pension fund, and that's why we always read about artists dying poor, because there is no social protection within the film industry but also it applies within the music industry. So we advocate for the increase in the volumes of films that are produced, because that would then ensure that we have sustainable businesses and sustainable jobs that are created. Just to take you through the highlights of the last 10 years, between 2001 and 2010, I'm not sure if Chair, you want me to read the numbers, but I know that we have time constraints. But these are the numbers, and I'm sure this presentation is available to members. But I just want to highlight the fact that I know that in this slide we're not talking about the number of films that were produced or developed year by year, but between 2003 and 2006, we had an extra allocation of 35 million rand that was specifically ring-fenced for the development of feature films. Now, most of you would remember the time when Filthy won the Oscar, when Yesterday was nominated, when Hotel Rwanda. In that year, or in that MTF period, we were able to produce 26 feature films. Just with the 35 million rand ring fence for feature films. Now, what it meant that, you know, we were able to then redirect some of the money towards documentaries. So a lot more documentaries were produced during that period. But come 2006, we went back to producing two films, and by 2009, we were producing about four films per annum. Now, I'm talking South African films, indigenous films. Just I hope that it will make sense that, you know, unless we put more effort and whilst we continue to advocate for co-productions, you know, again, co-productions, sometimes we lose control on the content. And as long as we're not majority partner, our foreign partner will tell us how the script should be written. That's a danger. But how do you protect ourselves? If we invest more, we then therefore in control of the content and the script. The last 10 years, five co-production treaties were signed. The first one, of course, was signed before the NFVF was established. That one is Canada. We have since signed co-production treaty with Germany, Italy, the UK, and France. Last year, we signed a treaty with Australia. Unfortunately, that one is still not active because of the processes that need to be followed in Australia. And just to remind everyone, co-production treaties are like any other business or trade instrument between the two countries. So the treaties are signed between the Minister of Arts and Culture in South Africa and his or her counterpart in the country that we're signing with. The NFVF's role is to facilitate and negotiate the treaty, but also as per the Minister's directive, we also manage the co-production process. So we do all the administration around co-production. In this period, the NFVF certified, or the Minister certified, 26 films with a production budget value of 680 million rand. South Africa's financial participation amounted to 380 million of the total budget for those films that were certified. Of this amount, 369.4 million was spent in South Africa, qualifying for the local and co-production film and television incentive, which is normally known as the DTI rebate for film. the total allocation in the last 10 years was 293,389 million rand. Special project income that came from the DAC for the study and other programs that they asked us to do on their behalf amounted to 8.9 million. Other revenue, 33.2 million is money that we raised ourselves through sponsorships, through collaboration, through partnerships, working with others. And the total amount is 33.2 million. Total grant expenditure, because we separate here the expenditure, because the Act restricts us to spend not more than 25% of the allocation for our administration. So every year we have to ensure that not more than 25% of the budget allocated is spent for operational costs that will include salaries, rent, and so forth. Current allocation is 38.8 million, and we are grateful to say and thank this House, thank the ministers, Ms. Lulu Kunwana, and Minister Paul Mashatile. We have had an additional 135 million rand allocated for the MTF period starting this year to 2013. So the current allocation today would amount to 78 million rand. So there's about 33 million rand that was allocated for this financial year. And that is as a result of the NABF using its skills and networks and all sorts of lobbying tactics to be able to go to National Treasury and convince National Treasury on viability and the opportunity that exists within the film industry and the amount of a number of jobs that could be created. And that's how we got the allocation. We made the presentation to Treasury on the 18th of July last year, and in November we were informed that the 135 was allocated, and we're very grateful. I think the film industry is grateful. We think that the additional amount will take us to the next step. We're excited that the minister, his first statements after his appointment as minister, actually put film as a priority of his program during his term as minister. So here is just a list of awards that have been achieved throughout the last 10 years. I will not go through all of them individually. The best known, of course, firstly winning the Oscar, Hotel Rwanda being nominated for 4 Oscars, yesterday being nominated for an Oscar. And I think I need to mention here the Lion's Trail, the documentary about Imbube, which was funded by the NABF, which went to win an Emmy Award in New York. Now, members, we just wanted to give you just an idea of what it takes to produce a film and what are the benefits. And we thought we'll use what is generally popular, what is known by everyone. For instance, the film Tsotsi was an unofficial co-production between South Africa and the UK. So it was because it was before we had the treaty between the two countries. The total budget was 22.2 million rand. Of the 22.2 million rand, 30 million came from South Africa, South African investment. The qualifying South African spend, which is how the DTI determines how they're going to give the rebate, the qualifying South African production expenditure was 18 million rand. So we invested 13 million rand, 18 million rand was spent in South Africa. In simple terms, I would say 5 million rand more was brought into the country. 197 jobs were created. Box office returns, the money that was generated in the cinemas in South Africa was 8.1 million rand. The worldwide revenue, so the money that was collected from everywhere else around the world, was 42 million rand. So, you spent 22 million rand, what was made worldwide was 42 million rand. So, in simpler terms, we could say that profit of 20 million rand was made. Of course, what we don't know at the moment is how much was spent in the marketing of the film, because that also becomes huge. So of course, winning the Oscar also created a lot of value for South Africa internationally, everyone, and we cannot put monetary value to that. But if we talk to South African tourism, if we talk to South Africa, they might be able to help us and determine that. Now, just to break it down, of the 22.2, 6 million rand was spent in labor costs. 1.5 was paid to the state as tax, pay as UN. And 1.9 was paid as VAT during the production. 1 million rand was paid as VAT on box office returns, the money collected at cinemas. So the total amount that came back to the state was 4.4 million rand. So the state contributed 13.7 million rand, and 4.4 million rand came back directly out of the taxes. So we simply say about 32.7% of the money came back. Of course, then we look at the value of the number of jobs that were created, we look at the value generated by winning the award and so forth and so forth. Now, this White Wedding, most of you would know, White Wedding was not a co-production, it was a production generated, developed and made in South Africa. The budget, total budget was 4.6, and we encourage that our films should actually never cost more than 10 million if they're going to be able to generate returns at box office. White Wedding, 4.6 million. DTI rebate contribution, 1.6. 387 jobs. Box office returns, 4.9 million rand. So this film was able to get its money back. And that's why we say our films should, we're now beginning to talk of low budget model, meaning that what we put, we need to be able to get back out of box office in South Africa. And then when it goes out and we're able to get returns there, it becomes a profit for the production. Of that 4.6 million, 1.5 was labor cost, 388,000 was pay as UN, the VAT was 381, VAT on box office 610, total amount back to the state 1.3, state contribution 1.6, so 84% of the money that the state put through the DTI rebate, the part of the money came back, and we had a firm that we could call South Africa. Now, this is a very interesting statistic, because what we did here, we looked at other countries that are comparable to us. You know, we looked at South Korea, for instance, we looked at the population in South Korea, and we looked at South Africa. Of course, it could be said that the economy of Korea is at least 3 or 4 times bigger than South Africa's economy. But I just want to highlight a few stats here, particularly around local film share. The local films in Korea have a 50% share, whereas we have 0.7% share terms of our firm in South Africa. If you look at admissions, 58.9 million Koreans go to the cinemas, 27.1 South Africans go to the cinemas. I don't think that is in dollars. This is a very interesting one. Sites and screens. In South Korea, they have 348 sites and 2,085 screens. In South Africa, we have 30 sites and only 743 screens. What it means is that in South Africa, we still do not have cinemas where the majority of the people live. The 30 sites that we're talking about, they are still concentrated in the major urban centers, and particularly in areas where the majority of the people do not reside. This is another interesting stat. Population per screen. In Korea, they have 23,261 people per screen. In South Africa, we have 64,109 people per screen. What it means is that there's still an opportunity. So if everyone wants to put money and invest in the cinema business in South Africa, they would be successful, because we still have at least three times the number of people when we compare to Korea. In fact, in the U.S., with their population, they have 4,000 persons per screen. And the U.K., they have about 10,000 persons per screen. It just shows that there's an opportunity here.
I'm just trying to check. Are you okay?
Okay, fine. I think we can allow him to take just two.
Again, if you look at the government's
in Korea, at least about 34 million rand per annum. In South Africa, we're still contributing at least about $5.5 million per annum. And of course, today we cannot say the same. These are the figures for 2009-2010. So the new allocation would have to do the calculation. So, in Korea, they produce 82 films per annum. In South Africa, at least we could safely say on average we produce 10 films per annum. And that has to change if we are going to say we have a film industry in South Africa. So these are just some of the innovative ideas. We've developed a business case for the establishment of what we think could be a South African Film and Development Corporation. We believe that there's a need for South Africa to create, for government, to create a company that would develop content. Because currently, it is the private sector that determines what films are made. So, if I want to tell my story and it's not attractive to someone who's got the money, that story might not be told. So if you want to tell the stories of our heroes and legends, that story might not be told. It still pains me that today we do not have a document about O.R. Tambo. I thought it would happen during my term at the NFVF, but it looks like it's not going to happen. But what I'm trying to say, we cannot continue to leave development of content to the private sector, because private sector moves, private sector decides, and just besides the fact that our industry is still, I'd say, 85% white, the black stories will still not be told if truth be told. So unless the state intervenes, we're not going to be able to address some of these things. Just like distribution, we think And in many other countries, in France, you know, they would have, for instance, a state distribution entity, so that all those films that are being made in the rural areas that come to the state distribution entity and is able to take them out and also have them packaged and so forth. The NABS has already started. I'm sure members who were here during that time, I think 2 years ago, we, during the Parliament Film Festival, we premiered with a film called Skin. And that film, the NSDF was the official distributor of that film. And I can tell you now that we changed, just distributing that film, we changed the way films are distributed in South Africa today. Technical and numerical have to pursue us. They are no longer dictating terms. We are calling the shots because we show them that for as long as you don't think out of the box, if you are closed in, nothing is going to change. So, but what we are able to do with Skin, we took 462 kids from previously disadvantaged communities on the 11th of February last year. We put them into the cinemas to go and watch that film. All matric, and we had a questionnaire that they had to fill. The majority of those matric students had never been to a cinema before until that opportunity came. In fact, the majority of the kids said they understood how apartheid worked better after watching that film than anything they've ever been taught. And this shows the power of cinema. And still a film that was not told as a propaganda tool, it was not told, it was a beautiful story or a sad story told with honesty. And I think that's what we achieved with that film. So as we still intend, and we still intend pursuing creating the distribution arm of the NSDF to be able to take the films that will never reach the screen. There are a lot of films that I've made, but they will never reach the screen because those that control distribution. By the way, I grew up in Puri, and there was AHU Cinema, and there was St. Susie Cinema in Cape Town. All those cinemas closed down in the 80s, because the majors, Technical and New Metro, ensured that they were not getting the content they required. That's why you need an alternative. That's why you need another player in this space. And by the way, distribution, that is where money is to be made in film. Production, you get the fees, but control of the money for entrepreneurs is in distribution. So we have developed a business plan for distribution. We've also developed a business plan for the establishment of cinemas in underdeveloped areas. The minister, Ms. Lulu Klingwana, was able to secure us 10 million rands for the development of digital screens. And we will be currently working out a tender to put at least one or two sites as pilots, because we don't want to, again, put too much money when we have not tested whether those films, those cinemas will work or not. Today, with digital technology, we think that we can be able to reach out to many parts of our country. This slide just shows, you know, what is available within the state in terms of funding and support. NFDF, South African Revenue Service, we're busy with SARS to look at how we can restructure Section 24F of the Income Tax Act, which actually is an opportunity that is available for the film industry. Unfortunately, not many people know how to use 24F. Of course, the DTI, we're still trying to get the SABC on board. In fact, we've developed a project with the IDC called a low-budget model, where we're looking at, the IDC has committed 160 million rand. We are inviting the NABF will commit 20 million rand in the next 3 years. We are inviting the SABC to come in as an investor, at least 25%, part of which will be license fees, but also part of it will be equity. We are very surprised because the SABC has not taken the opportunity, even though the IDC says we'll cash flow your contribution. If I was running the business, I would run, because they need the content.
I'm sorry to say all to disturb you. I think, can you kind of move faster?
Okay, so
yes.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson.
I think we are almost done.
Some of the stuff is really information which hopefully people can read. You know, the national festivals that we support, the major one is Devon International Film Festival, Guamashu Film Festival, which takes place at Ekaya Community Center in Guamashu. In fact, we have put some money into revamping the hall there, because that's one of the sites that we want to turn into a cinema. Before the World Cup, we put some sound equipment and a new screen. Very soon we'll be putting new chairs, carpet, and making the place available for showing movies. We still continue to support the Encounters Document Film Festival, which is a major festival in South Africa for documentaries. Tri-Continents is looking at films from the South. Out in Africa, again, Lesbian Film Festival. Bafundi, which is a student film festival. Nabubomi is a school's program that takes place in Port Elizabeth, where young people are being taught and given the opportunity to make films, and that those films are then shown on the SABC. As I spoke earlier on about skin, the distribution of screen, and the fact that just distributing that film, we're able to liberate about 20 million rand worth value in PR. That film was on every magazine, in every newspaper, and we didn't spend a cent for that. We continue to look at outreach programs for students, and we will be going to all the schools, what do they call them, the career centers, to go and introduce film as a career, even at the high school level. In terms of intergovernmental relations and stakeholder management, I have to say, Chairperson, I think we need to be proud to say that the film sector, and particularly the NABF, has shown how state institutions can work together. Today, we have an almost permanent forum between ourselves, the DTI, Treasury, IDC, and FAS, to look at what kind of interventions and what role all of us can play individually. We continue to work with the Film Commission. I have to say, we do get invites from all the provinces. Everyone wants to establish the Film Commission. We do not believe that establishing a film commission will necessarily bring productions into the area. But what we are saying to the province is, let's work together and invest in training young people from those provinces, you know, into the film schools, because they're the ones who ultimately will make sure that the film commission actually does work. We have, of course, signed MOUs with Tony University of Technology, and we've been working closer together. We're currently working on an industry review with the assistance of Tony University of Technology. And we also signed an MOU with the University of Limpopo, because we also believe that these agreements will also give us access to young people in those areas to access the film opportunity. So moving forward towards 2025, we think that the 135 million that has been allocated is going to make a huge, huge difference. We are now aligning our strategies to the new growth path because we have to show how this 135 is going to help in creating more jobs. We're going to be looking at education training programs that address skills gaps. We're going to increase resources to both script and development and production. We're going to introduce slate funds. You know, slate funding is looking at the company and funding not one project, but giving them more than one project so that they are going to be able to grow as a business. But then we require that people actually give us a proper business plan. And we've now put mechanisms to actually assist in the development of those business plans. We're going to continue to use short film contests to look at professionals who are already in the industry who want to make the film. We do not believe it makes sense to invest in a feature film for someone who's never produced a feature film. So we are making money available for people to produce short films. Good, very good example, Zola Masego, before he directed Drum, he had to direct a few short films to give him the confidence, but also to be able to raise the money, because that's the most important thing. We are working on putting up support incubation programs nationally. We are looking at innovative distribution initiatives, like I gave an example of Skin. We are now putting programs to actually developing entrepreneurs in the film industry. Finally, my term at the NABF is finally coming to an end on the 31st of March 2011. This has been coming, my contract originally expired on the 31st of August 2010. And I was asked to stay on because we had a situation where the council and the term of the CEO were coming to an end at the same time, and we're hoping by March that the council would have been appointed. I would have been happy to help induct the new council, but Karen Son, who's our chief financial officer, has been formally appointed by the council that was leaving to start on the 1st of April 2011. So, Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. And if I took too long, my apologies. I had to condense 4 years stuff into a few hours. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mbalo. I was not rushing you. I know the questions would be a lot, and you still have to answer the prior thing time. Thank you, honorable members. The CEO of the National Film and Video has made a presentation, and I believe you all listened, and it would be sadful to know that you're also departing, but I believe you're also still going to stay in the film and video industry. I will note members for questions. It was a long presentation, but Masuri, you are noted. Malishiva, you are noted. The owner of Lloyd Trade, Fabuzi Kaila, and Mimushwana. Okay, Masuri, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks to the CEO, Mr. Eddie Mbalo. And Chairperson, I think we did well by chasing the other group away. Otherwise, we wouldn't finish on time. Looking at the report, yeah. You'll pardon some of us, Mr. Mbalo. We'll ask questions maybe that seem to be a little bit out of the way because we are not familiar to the film industry. But I'm just interested to know how you recruit the students to the film school, especially students from the rural area. When you speak about the indigenous languages, how do you also recruit the people from the rural who have this talent, you know, that is not known to people at times? And on page 15 you spoke about the producer. I'm surprised that this is one field I feel that more women are interested. Can you maybe elaborate why you have the black males, you know, less black males? Quite interesting. What is actually attracting the women in this field? You spoke also about how you view the response of the people in terms of the cinema. Now that we've got the DSTVs and all the things that we are exposed to now, how do you find it, the comparison between the TVs and the cinemas, you know, the population, how do you, and what is your strategy in maybe working towards the digital migration that is coming forth and maybe the switching off of the analog? How do you think it's going to affect the whole thing? Is it going to affect you people, or you think you are not affected? And these treaties between South Africa and other countries, do they benefit the ordinary people in the township? And I suppose we'll hear about these treaties when the minister reports to Parliament. What exactly, what is the intention of making such treaties? I see here you've got treaties in so many countries. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Store, Honorable Shiva.
Thank you, Chairperson. But most of my question is covered by my story. My first question is on the funding. I just want to know if you only get funding from the department or the other government institutions also fund you like Lotto. My second question is on the 26 staff. I want to know if these 26 staff have got the people with disabilities. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Shiva, Honorable Dottray.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I would like to just commend you with receiving unqualified audit since your inception. I think that's quite an achievement. My questions then, in terms of the bursary scheme that you do have, do you keep track of the students afterwards? Do you keep track whether they are successful and whether they are then employed in the industry itself to determine whether that was indeed value for money? The same also in terms of the people that receive training that you do provide. Now, looking at training, and then I've just had a brief look, I've just received this now, in terms of the investigation into the feasibility of establishing a national film school, and I see it is in fact more of a needs analysis. but I don't really see any financial or a cost analysis being done to see whether this would in fact be something that can be considered. Safe to say that, and you can correct me because I've just glanced through it, that it should be initially fully funded by the department. Now, when one does make such a kind of a recommendation, one will have to know what the kind of figures are that we're talking about, and have you done such a study. And then something that I'm very curious about, and I think you also alluded to the fact that our chairperson is very enthusiastic about the idea of South Africa also creating a Bollywood, because I think we do have the capabilities, we do have the talent, we do have the creativity. But what I find somewhat strange is on page 2, in the value chart, you say it reminds us that film and video are not about pacifying the nation with forms of escapism. But reality is, if one wants a very strong film industry, one will also have to provide people with entertainment, because that is why they go to the cinemas, not only to be educated. And what? How do you see that balance? Because if one wants to grow this industry, we will have to get the people to the cinemas. A, by providing cinemas where people are, which I think is sorely lacking in our country. And B, then we have to first get people to the cinemas. And then one can expand your content in terms of being a bit more educational, whatever, but first get the people to the cinemas so that they can enjoy it. That's what people pay for.
And thank you, Honourable Member, Honourable Jacola.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I must say that, you know, I'm thanking you very much for having packaged, you know, your presentation very well. That does not suggest that there wouldn't be any questions or concerns. But really, you can be able to follow, you know, what has been happening, you know, up to that far. The first one is to say that you told us that you actually presented yourself, you know, previously to the committee, and I picked you up. The fact that, you know, for the last 3-4 years or so, you never did, and what could have been the reason, and for really not presenting yourself, you know, and today you're coming up with such a good package. The next one would be on page 5. You know, your positioning strategy around the civil society organization. I understand that you also engage and involve or allow the participation of the civil society organization. And I will be asking your criteria of selection, of selecting the actual CSOs that you probably work with. And if you do have the long-term partners that you have, you know, I'm very interested in that. And the next one would be on annual report. The study recommends the establishment of the NFS. And somewhere along the line, this was rejected. I just need some clarity on what really happened. What would be your recommendation? What's the way forward on this? On page 34, intergovernmental and stakeholder relations. Third bullet,
from the top. Increased collaboration and strengthened relations between the groups IDC and so on, DTI. Yes, strengthened relations. Is it about getting more money from these institutions? Well, what is it that is being strengthened? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mshwana.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would start by thanking the presenters for a comprehensive document, but however, we do have some questions to ask. And actually, I had to cut because I think I have a lot of questions. But I start with asking you what informs the fund, the distribution of your funding. When you fund, I think the students, so those that answer your answer, what informs the percentage? Because I'm looking at the percentages, and it's like there has to be black women, black females, those delegations. What if there are only black females that are poor? Do you still have to go and give the white females that I'm taking? Because I see the bazaar gives the colors and the gender, the genders and things. But does it have to be like that? Because if you find, maybe you will find that it's only one sector that needs bazaar. Say white for crying out that white needs that. Or say black females. Now you don't have to come with one female, white one. I'm thinking, why should you have, especially the bazaar? Because it's not like every color or every gender must get it. Should be, unless if I don't understand. Because I was so concerned when I realized that this, the fact that every year when you give your bazaar, somebody white must get it, and female, somebody black and female. If I understood this correctly, what informs that? That was the first question. And secondly, I thought as we are training towards these industry industry transformation, it's actually, they should be transformed, but when you go to page 17, there's a gloom story. And the gloom story is that you look at the industry, it's white dominated, if I recorded it correctly, because I don't want to go to this page 17. The industry remains white dominated. It doesn't matter what we do, the plan and stuff. This thing is making a lot of noise. I don't know if I need it. Because I've got,
no, we need it because we are recording what we are watching.
Okay. You know the voice is my friend.
Can it be on, Honorable Shana?
The industry. Is it? No, you put me off. Thank you. The industry.
If it's called, you can use another mic because we have to record whatever we're saying.
Okay. Can we go to page 17 in the meantime? Because my next door neighbor confused me a little bit by assisting here. But on page 17, I see that the industry is not yet transformed. It's a statement that is here. And it says black graduates still struggle to find work. An industry dominated by white owned companies and creative. Yes, it's good for us to know this. But is there a way forward? Because we need to change this. We cannot sit here and wait about it, and it's like it's a nice story that we listen to year in and year out. You'll be surprised because I was not in arts and culture, but I think it's a general concern that this country needs to be transformed. Now, we can't do all the training and all the things that we're doing at the end of the day. We sit down and put a picture that the black graduates still struggle to find work. After all the training, something must be done. Such that my next question is it possible when people are trained that you match your training with the industry out there? I remember long ago when people went to school maybe to become educators, it was known that there are so many educators that's necessary. Therefore, you train according to the need. Or we just come up with, we would train these people at the end of the day, we don't know where to put them. That's the question that I wanted to ask for now. And finally, the site in rural areas, it's a scarcity, yes, we agree with you. The cinemas, we don't have them there in rural areas. But is there a plan? Because if we come here and wait, then we don't know if there's a plan, at least, unless if I misunderstood or I didn't listen, where you concluded and telling us about a plan. Because there should be a plan in place to deal with the concerns that we are noting. We can't have people in rural areas reading in stories about cinemas. They need to leave these things. We need to move towards that era where South Africa will be enjoying the same. I don't have to stay in an urban area to enjoy the difference, because it educationally changes us. So those are the three questions that I would like to confine myself to now, for now. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you, members. I've got a few questions as well. I think the first question that I will ask is partnerships, basically. Have you considered partnerships with the Department of Higher Education? Because it's obvious that after the matric students finish school, then what can the department do? I don't know. I cannot elaborate at this stage to say what. But considering what you just presented. Secondly, on what was raised on the issue that started by the two wise women on my right here, the issue that these movies are only watched in town. What are your partnerships? Do you have any partnerships with the Department of Arts and Culture in provinces? Not only national, in provinces. And municipalities as well, because that's where I believe that if you want to touch people on the ground, those are the people that you must contact. But I want to go on further to say, you see, we limit. We always say we don't reach people, but we limit. In South Africa, we still have traditional leaders who still have traditional leaders, you have your chiefs, you have everyone, who have access mainly to the people, you know. I know you, if you can go to that extent, you can touch all the bases of people in the area that you want and you need. Other things also relevant. Have you done a feasibility study? You know, I like Bollywood because, as you said, I'm passionate. Because there was Hollywood. And Bollywood came out of Hollywood. It became big. India, just for what LA was doing, they did a study. And look at Bollywood now. And they're only playing Indian movies. And we as South Africans were watching them on Bollywood. I'm one of their friends, you know. Is it not, have you done a feasibility study that would say that would make that in South Africa? I know we are still in a transforming state. I know we are still a developmental state. Those I take into consideration. But is there anything that you can, sorry, forgive me, for this industry to come from? Coming with on what Honorable Chikala was asking about the issue of the National Film School, I just want also just a bit of elaboration, because you spoke about those who lobbied against. You know, I want to understand who and why against, because it becomes very expensive. I've met some students in this film school. They say it's very expensive for them because these are privately owned. And unfortunately, they are probably owned by only white people. There's nothing racial, but it's a reality. White, but it's very expensive, even for a white child, to study there. You know, we're saying generally about South Africans. Is there any way, did you do enough lobbying from civil society, as Honorable Chikala said, from traditional leaders, from business? Okay, business only want to prevent, but from business as well, there are those who are proactive. Because you see, you would need lobby groups from our side as well if you want to do such. You don't look at certain, so this money who are capitalist in nature will be against this, because obviously they're killing their business. So, what have you done? You see, even to the new CEO coming, Karen, you will not survive if you don't work with civil society. At any race, at any level, that I must say. And also to further say to what Honorable Leshiva raised about the issue of people living with disability. In South Africa, we are an inclusive society. We don't exclude anyone with any condition. We would have loved to hear that on your report, even as your staff, and how many has been trained as well. I think you just give us briefly. Thank you. can.
Chairperson, I think I spoke too long. I'm going to allow my colleagues to respond, and I'll assist whenever necessary.
Good afternoon, members. The first question was around the recruitment of students for our bursaries. Normally, every year, we, as Eddie spoke about a little bit earlier, we do interact with all the various institutions that offer form studies as a degree at their institutions. They are then aware that we provide bursaries, and normally they would inform their students that they are able to apply to the NSF for bursaries. In addition to that, we also interact with various form commissions around the country, with provinces as well, just advising people of what the offerings are at the NSF, and that's really how we recruit students. We also do intend in the future to get more involved at a high school level. We would really like to attend much more career expos. We do occasionally attend, we've done it in the past with the Film and Publications Board and the SABC, where we have attended a few high school roadshows just to inform the public out there what opportunities are available in the film arena. And that's how we attract students into the arena. And perhaps I'll just answer your question, because it followed on about do we then say we're going to set aside a certain a number of bursaries for white students, black students, and so forth. No, we don't. We see what applicants come in, and based on that, we then decide which students to award bursaries to. So each year, we don't say we're going to give 5 bursaries to white females, 10 bursaries to black females. It's completely on a needs basis. So every year our panelists would look, we'll say, okay, we've received 200 applications, we've got 50 bursaries to be awarded, where are the most needed, which are the students that need bursaries the most, and also which are the areas that we've identified that the industry needs.
Okay, there was good afternoon, members. There was one question that was asked about whether treaties benefit ordinary people, ordinary South Africans. I think this is one of those, it's not an easy question to answer, because the reason South Africa continues to enter into the trade agreements is, it's purely for the benefit of producers who are able to use them. And the reason we continue as a country to position ourselves as a, we always talk about positioning South Africa as a preferred co-producing partner. And the actual people who benefit from these schemes are producers who actually have projects that they want to work with. The norm is that you want to approach a partner in a country, say, for example, we've spoken about the UK, we've spoken about Italy. It's people who can actually use the incentives in both countries that the governments have set aside for the benefit of producers who want to make films. So, that's what I'm saying. It's a difficult yes or no question, because I cannot say how, ordinary South Africans would benefit, at the outset. But of course, the benefit is that there are stories that are told between the two countries, that are shared between the countries. For example, if it's a South Africa-UK collaboration, that story gets to be told from a South African perspective, and it gets to be told from a UK perspective. So the audiences in South Africa and the audiences in the UK, they do get the benefit to have access or to see stories that would not ordinarily have been made, and something that they would have not ordinarily seen. And then there was another question about the impact of digital migration on the film and video industry. Of course, it's something that we make an effort to keep tabs on. The digital migration policy, especially the issue around the standards that are going to be determined, is important for the sector, because the one thing that we've always spoken about is that digital migration or digitization of content affords the industry a lot of opportunities. We know for a fact that once the policy has been sorted out, there is going to be more demand for content. That means that there's going to be more work for South African producers. There's going to be more products for South African audiences to be able to consume. So the simple answer is to say yes, there is a lot of benefit in terms of how the policy is going to affect us as an industry.
Maybe if I could just add, because the real issue is that television is, you know, when we talk of content development, we then talk of content distribution. And we always talk of different platforms. So, for instance, television is a platform, cinema is a platform, internet is a platform, and so forth. And it is really, and each one of them supports the other. For instance, with film, with feature films, that films that go to the cinema, they will normally start at the cinema and then go into television, then go into DVD, and then these are all, when we talk of the value chain, these are all the opportunities to exploit the content. But what we know is that South Africans, we know on television, South Africans prefer local content. If we look at the top 10 TV programs on television, they're the local content. But we're now seeing with the, you know, emergence of Mzansi TV, for instance, and unfortunately with the crisis of the SABC, people are migrating to those platforms, which is then becoming expensive because then you have to get a decoder and so forth and so forth. But what it does, and the digital migration is going to create an opportunity for more platforms. But what we have to do, as we talk of these platforms, we need to talk of content. Are we going to have enough content to fill in all these platforms? Because what you're going to see, you're going to see a lot of foreign content again. You know, you just have to look at DSTV. The majority of content on DSTV is foreign content. And that's what's going to happen. So we can open up the airwaves, but if we're not developing our own content, people are going to continue to be fed foreign content, you know, and therefore we lose our culture, our traditions, and everything else, because people then start adapting to those to what they see on television. But in terms of film industry and television, they're brother and sister, they always have to work together.
There was also a question around the funding sources for the NAVF. Currently, the NAVF only receives funding from the Department of Arts and Culture, but throughout the year, we also try and leverage partnerships. So occasionally, if we go into, for example, a film festival, we might leverage funds for a specific program with the Department of Arts and Culture, SABC or the Department of Trade and Industry. Last year, for example, when we went to the Cannes Film Festival, because there was a big hype around the World Cup, the International Marketing Council was very happy to come on board as a sponsor. So those are the kind of things we leverage throughout the year. With regard to the lotto, we did apply to the lotto 2000, and I'll let Eddie speak a little bit more about the lotto.
In fact, the lotto is my, you know, throughout the years, the ministers know, it became my pet project. Because I think within the National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund, particularly around art and culture, we have a large pool of resources available for the film industry, but also for the arts generally. Unfortunately, and I speak from experience, I used to serve on the distribution agency, a lot of money is never spent because there's no capacity within the National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund. The truth of the matter is that, you know, you have five individuals who are actually employed in institutions who go and sit once a month or twice a month, sometimes maybe four times, five times a month, because also you get paid for sitting on the. So the more meetings you have, the better. So people begin to supplement their salaries. just sitting on those. But the truth of the matter is that there needs to be intervention, and I've always called for state intervention, whereby we can work the institutions, the NFBF, the NAC, NHC, and every other funding institution within the US can work with the national lottery, because within these institutions we have the capacity, we have the knowledge, but also we know accountability structures. And we're not saying that all the money should be given to these institutions. We're saying there should be an allocation, because that would relieve the pressure. The truth of the matter, if you apply to the for the last time, I don't know when last they had a call, but for what I know is that usually it takes a year just to get a letter of acknowledgement, you know, that, you know, we acknowledge the receipt of your, by the time, that's why a lot of programs, the thing we included, had to close down, because the lottery, people became dependent on the lottery, and the lottery distribution agency was not responding. The truth of it is not working. And the sooner the lottery is allowed, or it opens itself to work with the institutions, my gripe is also that you cannot have an institution that funds the arts, and that funding is not informed by the national strategy for the development of the arts. There is no relationship or a known relationship between the Department of Arts and Culture and the National Lottery Distribution Agency, except for when, you know, the minister is expected to recommend people who will serve on the distribution agency. I think the truth of the matter is that there's lots of money sitting with the lottery distribution trust fund, particularly in the arts. And I'm surprised, because in the sports side, they do, you know, the lottery would give money to SAFCOC to distribute to all the other sports. It's not working, and I think until an intervention, I think it takes state intervention. And I know initially the argument was that government cannot interfere because of the way the lottery funds, but the truth of the matter, it is still a state institution, and it has to be held to account.
Right. Also, in addition, when we talk about funding, I think one of the things that the NABF has always said is that we don't necessarily want all the funding to come to the NABF. It's really about funding for the sector. So it's about how do we leverage partnerships. So for example, when Eddie spoke about partnerships with the DTI, the IDC, and this has been very instrumental in unlocking funds, not to come to the NABF, but funds to go towards the industry. So now when we talk about the low budget model, it's bringing partners together so that the money doesn't necessarily come to the NABF, but it's the IDC saying, we're going to put up $160 million for the sector. It's about the DTI saying, how are we going to streamline the rebate processes so that these companies can access money. So it's really about the industry actually accessing funding and not necessarily just the NABF. And just recently we had a meeting with the NES, the National Empowerment Fund, because they're really also interested in how they can be involved in funding films from, especially at a grassroots level. So they really want to work very closely with the NABF. So these are just other sources of funding that the NABF continues to engage with and create partnerships with and leverage. Then there was a question on the bursaries about absorption. I'll let Afeli speak to that, because we regularly do research studies about how many students that we have funded actually enter the sector.
On the issue of graduate absorption, the first time that the NABF had an opportunity to do a graduate absorption study was in 2008. And we took that opportunity to look backwards in terms of all the number of students that have gone through, you know, various forms of training, of course, from the support of the NSDM. And unfortunately, it's just, we don't have copies of the study with, but it's actually quite interesting, because one of the major findings that came out of the study was that the industry is actually losing a lot of workers to other sectors. The challenge, of course, is that they are not getting employment in the areas that they have trained for. And some of the sectors, for your information, some of the people would say, now I'm going to join, say, the tourism sector, or I'm just going to go to any sector where I will be able to find some form of employment so that I can survive. Of course, it's important for us to be able to do this research regularly, because it also informs the kind of areas of interventions that the NSDF needs to get involved in from a funding perspective. So, you know, I can always tie this back to the investigation into the establishment of the National Film School. If you can go through chapter 4, particularly page 66, it does highlight some of the issues that kind of impacts on some of the recruitment patterns within the industry, because what it says is that, you know, the industry is still dominated by certain companies. So if you do not have, you know, prior work experience, or you do not have, you know, networks within that field, it's difficult for you to find jobs or to find work that is going to be sustainable. And this kind of debate obviously is very important, because we need to start talking about developing a sustainable sector for the South African industry. And I know that earlier in the presentation we've spoken about the importance of increasing the volume. We have spoken about, you know, the importance of establishing sustainable companies, because as much as there's a lot of interventions in training, this needs to be coordinated to make sure that all these people who have been trained do get the opportunities to be able to get further work as they progress through the, you know, the various areas that they can, you know, get experience or expertise in the various, you know, value chain in the industry. So I think going forward, it's something that we will have to do every 3 years, obviously taking into account that most of the students go through 3-year degrees. So you will give them an opportunity to do year 1, year 2, year 3, and then on year 4, that's when you get an opportunity to keep track in terms of, are they employed, what are they doing, what is the experience going forward. But, you know, the previous study obviously indicates that the majority of the students, unfortunately, are still struggling to get jobs or employment within the sector.
If, you know, I think you remember that I spoke earlier on of what we propose, the National Film Development Corporation of some sort, which is a production entity. And again, I'll go back to the past. If you were white and African in the past and you wanted to enter the film industry, you'd go to Tshwane University or Pretoria Technical, because it had a film school. It was a good film school, because the problem is that the curriculum was in Afrikaans, so it was not accessible to the majority of the people. But if you qualified from Pretoria Technical, you would then leave to go and work at a company within the SABC called Safritel. It was a production entity. At that time, if you remember, SABC used to produce internally. So you would leave Pretoria Tech, go to Safritel, and that's where you'd be able to practice your craft. You'd be able to gain the experience. Once you have come out of there, then you can either go and work as an independent, or you can get to work in production companies, or you can go and produce anywhere else in the world. That does not exist anymore, because everything is now left it to the private sector. So you find that the majority, and I say the majority of black kids, when they come out, they do not necessarily have an avenue that they can go to, because we do not have the question, the issue. The 85% of the companies are still white owned. So you do not have, or the capacity for these people to be absorbed into these companies, because for whatever reason, whether it's preference, but the majority of the kids come to the NFEF, they come to me and say, Israeli, you know, here's my certificate. I said, well, you need a showreel, you know, but you're going to be able to do a showreel if you work somewhere and say, I worked on this production. Of course, the crisis of the SABC does not help, because SABC is not commissioning enough content for independent producers, so we will have of a number of production companies closing down. So the truth of the matter is that, yes, and we cannot stop giving these young people an opportunity to study film. We have to continue, but we need to begin to find ways of how do we absorb them into the industry. The truth is it's not the responsibility of the NSDF, it's the responsibility of the industry. The NSDF can always assist, and that's what we do when we do these studies, when we propose the National Film School, when we propose the development corporation, or we propose a distribution entity. It is to create these opportunities where people can come out of film school and go and work. The truth of the matter, even going overseas, you would have had some kind of experience locally to for you to be able to travel and work somewhere else. On the National Film School and the cost analysis, yes, what we propose that the next step after this study is then to develop a feasibility study and say, what is the cost implication and where is the money going to come from? What we have to determine is whether there is a need for a National Film School. So we have to look at everything else that exists and say, yes, indeed, there is a need. The next step, therefore, is, you know, to be honest with you, when we started with the council of, I was on the inaugural council of the NSDF, that council thought that they had to establish the National Film School. But what we have to remind them is that, in fact, we have to be talking to the Department of Education, because you cannot establish a National Film School and not follow the education policy of the country. So all of these things have to be dealt with. It might not happen now in my lifetime, our lifetime, but it's something that will have to happen at a certain point because there is a great need for it.
And just to add on that, there was a question that was raised with regards to the objections that were raised with relation to the National Food School. The CEO earlier in the presentation was actually making reference to some of the deliberations that came out of Indaba 2009. It was a forum where we had various stakeholders from civil society. We had stakeholders who were representing training providers. So we had various topics that had to be looked at. One of the recommendations that came out of one of the sessions that was dealing specifically around the issues of training and education in the film sector was that, of course, there were certain, there were specific groups that did not, agree or did not see the need for for the establishment of a National Film School. But what I would like to clarify in respect to that was that it's not necessarily on objection against the research or the recommendation that was made by the NSDF. The Indaba was just a platform that we used as an opportunity to get input from our stakeholders in terms of what the research had actually found out. So at the end of the day, this report that you see in front of you has also been informed by some of the discussions and some of the issues that came out of that forum. So it's not necessarily an objection that as it was raised in the question.
I think what we're really talking about there is that what surprised us was that an industry representative body went on platform and say, we don't need a film school. Of course, then, we then ask, who is represented in that, in the organization itself, because it might just be a representative of a minority view or, a view that is lobbied. The truth of the matter is that we have to listen to everyone and take everyone's concerns, What we're surprised by is that the people who are actually directly involved in the industry would say you don't need a film school when, to be honest with you, they need training themselves, because we know there's a skills gap. We know that there's still a lot of retraining that has to you know, with the whole digital migration, you know, people have to be retrained. In fact, into the future, you're not going to talk of film school or broadcast school. You have to look at the whole convergence of technologies and say, where's the opportunity? So it's no longer going to be film, television, you know, it's going to be all these platforms that exist. And when you produce films, but again, when we talk training, when you teach lighting, for instance, you know, are we going to continue to say we're teaching lighting for cinema, you know, in the traditional way? No. When you teach lighting today, we have to teach for cinema, you have to teach for television, you have to teach for animation. You know, even though you don't physically put the light, you have to have an idea what lighting design means for everything. You know, so everything needs to change. And therefore, moving forward, people need to open up and say, how do you move forward and take advantage of the opportunity that exists today?
There was a question from one of the members about the staff at the NADS, the 26 staff, and whether any of them are disabled. And the answer is no. Unfortunately, we don't have any staff working that are disabled. But I need to say that that's not a conscious policy of the NADS, that we won't employ people that are disabled.
Are you approved? Members?
Just to deal with quickly with some of the questions, the reason why we haven't presented in the past, I think really we come at the invitation of the portfolio committee, and we continuously ask the department, you know, when we'll be scheduled. We will always be told that, look, you know, you have clean audits and therefore you're not a priority. And I think we wrote in the annual report
by whom?
People in the department. In fact, we wrote in this annual report the fact that we're not happy with the fact that we've not had the opportunity to present to portfolio committee. For us, this is where we get a feel of how the country feels about the work that we do. And the fact that you've done a great job, we always want to come and boast about it here and make everyone aware. So we're always happy to come. The positioning strategy, how do you select partners? The truth of it, we do not select partners. It's everyone has the right to walk into the NADS and demand the service. So we work with everyone else that is out there. We never check, you know, people's credentials. It doesn't work that way. The strengthening of relations, what are we talking about? You know, it is fundamentally, it is imperative that if we're going to deliver the service to South Africans, all those that impact on that community come together and work together. For instance, it is important that let's take the IDC, for instance, which between 2001 and 2006 lost about 500 million rand in the film industry. It becomes a matter of interest to us that, in fact, they're not able to lose money. It becomes important for us that entrepreneurs do not come and invest in the industry and then lose money. So it's very important for us that when SARS stops the Section 24F, you know, we are able to, as a lead institution in this sector, we're able to work with them and possibly guide them on the workings of the film industry. For instance, today we are relooking the whole certification of co-productions because we think that the people who are not doing the right thing. So we're going to the Reserve Bank and say, what is it that you should be looking for, or what is it that we should be looking for from the exchange control perspective, you know, because co-production means money come in, money goes out. What is it that we should be looking at so that we protect ourselves from people sending money in the guise of making a film. You know, so the partnerships are critical, and I was saying earlier on that we're very proud of the fact that in this sector, everyone seems to be working together. We just need to get the lottery on board.
Okay, thank you, CEO. I think we've got about 5 or 10 minutes left to release the members. There were hands, follow up, not sorry, your hand was the first one, the second, I'm trying to get the last.
But I just wanted to motivate the concern that I raised about this teaching. You see, it might look good to people that South Africa has achieved so many treaties. We have a serious concern as parliamentarians between the executive and parliament, where the executive will go and sign treaties, international instruments, without consulting with parliament. And then, when things don't work out, we as the people have to answer to the public that it's not all treaties that are good for us. Yes, for instance, if you talk about treaties that you have signed with countries, that would allow some other feelings that wouldn't show to our children according to our traditions and culture. That is my reason of the concern about the treaties that we sign, because we executive will go and sign protocols, and then we have, if they come to parliament and we don't know about the protocols, and we have to rubber stamp. That is my understanding, and that's my concern as a public representative. And when I was asking about the digital migration, I had in my mind the issue of a convergence, and I thought it would come to you as soon as I asked that because of the convergence, you would explain to us as filmmakers what do you think and how do you think these are going to come together. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Noamita.
Thank you, Chair. In the interest of time, I think I'll just mention a few things. Just to add to the voice that was said by the Chairperson. But, you know, when you speak of this endeavor where people said there's no need for a national film school, I think not until our people in the communities are sensitized about what this film is all about. You know, to them it's something very, very strange. Like, I come from a community, like a traditional leader myself, I come from a community where we have got high schools. But if you go to those schools and, you know, ask those students who are in matric or about film production or whatever, because they've never seen a cinema, it's something that they cannot even comprehend what it is all about. But when you look at the ordinary radio, they follow Mvango and they're interested in that, but why can't we pick it up to them? You know, I lived in a township where Foni is, where I used to live in Kwampoa. There was a big building she can, you know, back me up, which is the cinema. But it has never been used because nobody is trying to encourage them or, you know, sensitize the community that this is where we have to start. It is not our tradition, but we have to, you know, transform and be able to go up with it. And then also I want to comment, I want to say to just to add to what you have said, that unless we have got a very, you know, tangible partnership with the Department of Education, where we can say to them, although the school is in a rural area, but we need to start from somewhere in the curriculum, even if it's not in the curriculum, you know, something after the curriculum to say, this is something that you can teach our children. They are able to understand what it is all about. We've got a lot of untapped, you know, talent inside, outside, not just the whole community. You know, us as representative of the people, the vast of South Africans, this same industry is very new. I'm just saying to you and the new chief executive officer that think about the rural area, think about the schools in the rural area, and see and think about having this partnership with the Department of Education. Where can we start? I thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Two very short questions. I've noticed that the percentage that are given back to the state, if I understood correctly, are so different. There was a 32% back to state from one, and 84% on the other. Is there a desirable, or is there a standard that this is a percentage that must go back, or you just decide that the first question? Secondly, when are we moving towards the paradigm shift concerning the black teller, storyteller? Because it's like the story that I had is that you may have a story to tell, but you don't know how. From the black, if I understood exactly what you need to remember, that is the crack and outside that people need to know story that telling.
Tell them your branches, there is this organization still. How will it work with the youth?
I think I just want to lay out, because you can't say, because as long as you don't go out to the people, you will still sign all those treaties. Because these people, they buy a job and say, okay, this is a gap. I thought I should just be very clear on that one. CEO in the team, can you kindly answer the last question, and then we can kindly release it to them. Thank you.
One thing that I would really plead for, the treaties, particularly on the film industry, are critical, because at the moment we do not have enough resources. I think I showed you 22 million rand budget, 13 million came from South Africa, the rest came from outside. Now, this was a guy in England who decided to make a film in the language he didn't understand, Tsotsi. But two, he gave two young South Africans an opportunity for life, Presley and Terry Petro. Terry Petro today is a big star around the world. Now, and it's through these treaties, of course, in evaluating the project that qualify for a treaty, that's where we come in, to ensure that what man is talking about, you know, we do not approve content that in fact we do not believe would be suitable. There are no co-production about adult content, for instance. Up to this point, it's been unfair, because most of the stories that have been done as co-production are South African stories. We've not gone as South Africans to produce a French story, you know, to then make sure that the treaty is fair to both countries. The treaties have been more beneficial to South Africa, firstly on the content, but also more on the story. Where we come in again is ensuring that the content at least resonates with South African audiences. That's at least something that we can control. You know, on the issue around partnerships, the truth is that we partner with, you know, many institutions. We work with the Department of Arts and Culture in the provinces. Unfortunately, and I have to be honest here, is that we struggle. We struggle. I've been to Mpumalanga so many times. Every time we go, we talk about the same things. We leave the same documents. The Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, you know, we've been trying to reach out to this. The only time they come to us is when, where are we going next? You know, the Cannes Film Festival, LA, and it's problematic. But we say to the provinces, we can assist. We can guide them developing strategies, whether it's setting up a film office or a film commission, because, and the chairperson is correct, those provinces, that's where service delivery starts, at the local level. And I say to them all the time, people need to be able to go to their film office and say, what is available nationally? Then people will say, oh, you know, you can apply for a bursary at the NFBF. Oh, you know that the DTI has got this facility. You know that this is the benefit of the tax. So what we do, we go to on the road shows, we partner with universities, and these festivals also that we have, that's part of the how we link up with the communities, because there needs to be something that stimulates the activity, as ma'am is saying, you know, there needs to be, if there's a festival in Guangua, for instance, or even at the University of Limpopo, which happens every year, That film festival then gives young people an opportunity to say, wow, that's what I would like to do. I decided to get involved in the film industry as a young activist who was being chased and there were cameras following us. That's how I decided I wanted to, because I said I want to tell my story, you know, and that's what I've done all my life. So we are very aware of the fact that we have to reach out. We want to go out to the, and we want to work with the department, you know. So what I'll assure you, we'll continue to reach out and go out there and ensure that, you know, people are familiar, people are aware of the services that are the point I was responding to is, for instance, the CBOs and NGOs. You know, what I was saying is that, you know, when people approach, we never look at them and say, you know, we can't work. We always look at what is it that we can do together. The success of the NVF, I'll emphasize, the success of the NVF up to this point has been on the partnerships that we have developed, because we have not had enough resources to be able to do things. We've been able to do things because we partnered with others. Thank you, Shepherd.
Everything that Mr. Eddie Barlow is saying, fine. But who qualifies the concern that I have about some of these things? It must come to us. That's where we feature in the public hearing. It must come here, you see, to Parliament. That's what we want. You cannot tell us of the interaction, the shortcut, you and the department, without coming to us.
Thank you, Mr. Mbalo. I think Honorable Dor read my lips as well, because I was going to raise it and say that it comes to us. That's the most unfortunate part. I think there are certain things that we as a committee must solve with the department as well, because it comes to us. That's why you have to come and account to Parliament. Because if you don't do, actually, when you do your shortcuts, you are bypassing legislation. You know. And that's why it's very important that you interact with the committee so that you know. Because you might find people in the department not understanding. One was there to say he's supposed to CEO of the Mandela to fight. You'll find such people. And I was shocked. How do you come from the department to support the Mandela CEO? I was shocked. So those are things that you'll find. I think members, we've addressed the questions. And all I'd like to do right now is to say thank you to the NSC for coming to present, and as Honorable Lecturer said, it's good that you have an unqualified report, but I think you must increase your public partnership as well as stakeholder relations. I think as a committee, we're not impressed as well, because if you speak about the gang of... Also, you see, things like what you reported about the province is not coming on board, it's only a tour trip. You must respond to that thing. Because if you don't get such information, there's nothing with Parliament can oversee. You don't need to fear them, they won't threaten you, there's nothing that they'll do. These are the truths that we really want. And you said your contract is ending end of February. Okay, we are not sure that we'll see you before then. But if we don't, thank you for being the CEO of this foundation with a clean audit. I think that's more, way more concerns are about audits, especially because public funds are spent, public monies are used. We are very concerned that we are living with that experience. I hope it won't be lost away. But I believe the foundation, that the issue of the film school festival must pursue. Don't be demoralized by the first round. We need it from what we have presented. I think the committee, I believe, supports me on that one. And also your partnership strengthening with the Department of Higher Education, because this is where now you must present. Don't be limitless in what you do, because if you are limitless, they're not going to take the organization anywhere. And I hope, Mr. Mbalo, you're not going to leave this film industry. We need people like you. Don't want to see you as Nora Jones approach. But I want to say that as much as you leave the organization, please be supportive towards Karen, supportive towards the organization as well. And to Karen, who are going to meet us, what the department tells you is wrong, you must come and account to Parliament. These are public funds. I don't know who's advising you. I would have loved the names and the names and the shames of it. But we'll ensure that the minister, committee members, knows about those things. I think we have to meet them as soon as possible again. And they're coming in March. But no, these are the issues I think we must also raise. We would like to thank you for coming, and all the best, Karen and the team, for your future. But I want to say that as much as it's not in your policy, we would love as a report next time. You must have people with disabilities in your organization. As I said, it's an inclusive country, and it's part of the affirmative action as well. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Honorable members, the only thing that I want to, we've got minutes, there was sent some time back. I just want to have adoption, and I can send them off
I think the only two people who can do that is Honorable Jeff Kassler and three. So one must move. There were three people who are present in this meeting.
I do.
Honorable Jeff Kassler is moved. Okay, Honorable Mamita, I should have second then. Members, the Nelson Mandela issue, don't discuss it. Next week we'll be meeting them. We'll just give them a week. Alright.
Okay, in this issue of the Nelson Mandela Museum, Hensler would call them for next week. May I propose that we must also call the DG to be part of them, because I'm afraid of that.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Farai. I was going to raise this, but also to raise that I'm disappointed that two PLOs of the ministers are not here. And this is one issue that we spoke about. They must be here in this meeting. I'm going to raise it with the ministers pay commission as a committee.
Yes.
Because that's where you find minister and the committee and chair, usually it becomes the chair, fighting in such things, because now they are not. I'm going to raise it with them, and I thought I should raise it. Members, if you do not receive, you have not received invitations, official members of the ANC, due to the changes, because some names were not submitted to parliament, but now I know a lot of them was very concerned about it, and all of our rights. Your names are there, now everything is fine, so I don't think we'll have a problem as well. And I have a challenge. Some members are still fighting to come back to this committee. I can solve it. I can do it at ANC level only. Thank you, Nyabulek. And members, you are here.
Thank you. Are the new members welcome?
There are no new members, we are members.
I don't know.